Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast. My name is Zachary Mallory, and I am the founder and the host of the Rise Above Justice Movement and the Rise Above Justice Movement, the podcast. Today, I'll give a viewer discretion is advised due to the nature of the topics that we will be discussing. Today, I am joined by my new friend, Summer. Summer, welcome to the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast. Feel free to introduce yourself and walk us through your journey, my friend.
Well, first, thank you so much for having me today, on this lovely Sunday. And as you said, I am Summer Willis. I'm an endurance athlete recently and an advocate in the sexual violence space, and also a mom and a wife.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have one hell of a story. You know, it is so deeply inspiring because whenever we think about endurance, we think of athlete, like you said, but also in our survivor journey, it takes endurance to keep waking up every day, get out of bed. Some days it can feel like an absolute hurdle. See what I did there? It seems like a challenge, but what inspires you to continue pushing forward? What has been your journey in the survivor space? And what are you doing now? Because you're doing some big things, not only in Texas, but across the country. You know, you are leading the change in this space. And I'm so excited and deeply honored to sit down and talk to you today. And, you know, feel free to walk us through what it's looked like for you.
No, I love when I tell people that my endurance journey and being a survivor, it really goes hand in hand. And so I'm going to start with my journey and we'll go from there. So basically, now it's been 12 years ago, I was in college and I was a sophomore in college. I went to a fraternity party. And I was handed a drink and I took it and I drank it. And a lot of the rest of the night was a blur. I really remember two things from that night. I remember running so hard and so fast in the crisp October air and feeling freedom, and then face planting and looking at my hands and my knees with blood and not being able to feel anything. So I should have known then, like, something was terribly wrong. And then I remember being in a scalding hot shower and watching my blood go down the drain. So these intense feelings. The next morning I woke up, I was naked in bed with someone I had considered a friend, and just a terrible feeling in the pit of my stomach, and asked him what I was thinking, which is what happened. And he started laughing and he told me we had sex, but then followed up with, "You kept on saying no, you were screaming no, you kept on trying to push me off," all the while he was like laughing, recounting this night. And I knew then my life was not going to be like I thought it would, like I imagined it would be, and literally just felt so ashamed. And how could this happen to me? Didn't know what to do because I never expected to be a victim of this crime. And that he was laughing about literally taking this from me, my future from me. It's a feeling I'll never forget. And so now looking back at that shower scene, it's like I didn't even realize it at the time, but I was just trying to scrub off, burn off what had happened to me. So 3 days later, he published about his escapade in the fraternity newsletter, and just like all the guys saw that, like he had this victory. And one of the guys even asked me about it and said that there was a group of guys at this fraternity party saying they saw how out of it I was. I've always assumed someone put something in my drink because I only had one drink, and they were taking bets on who would get to take advantage of that, which just made me sick to my stomach. And he was laughing too. It was like a big joke, and I just spiraled. I stopped going to classes, even though I love school so much. I stopped seeing my friends and my family, and just the light went out of me. And that was how it was for 2 whole years. I was just a shadow of myself. And although I didn't tell people, they knew something was wrong because my dad, he used to call me Summer Sunshine, and he asked me what happened to that. So finally, fast forward 2 years, I finally saw a therapist, and she was like, "You need to get out of Austin." This was at University of Texas of Austin. "You need to get out of Austin. You need to find yourself again. You need to start over, start a new chapter." And so I did, and I went to Chile, and started studying comparative justice and social education. And I started to realize, and study that you can put good in the world, and all these terrible things happen. Like in Chile, it was the genocide that killed so many thousands of people. For me, it was like, how can I put good in the world? And I found education. So I taught at Title I schools in the United States. I joined Peace Corps, where I met my husband. And although I was never the person I thought I could be, I was able to find happiness. I married the best man I had ever met. We had two beautiful boys, and now we're fast-forwarding about 9 years into the future, but still, I was never the same. And this trauma, it would just come up occasionally. I would get triggered and just start sobbing, or have to like ball up in my closet because I just couldn't take whatever had triggered me. And it was a turning point, the turning point in my life. Whereas it was, I don't know, 8 a.m. at a 4-month-old and a 2-year-old, and we're already sitting on the ground just watching a TV show because I was just sobbing. And both of them look at me, and they're so young, and they started crying too. And I realized that my trauma was turning into their trauma, and my tears were turning into their tears. And so it was in that moment that I promised myself and them that I was going to try to finally stop running away and bearing this trauma that had happened to me 9 years ago. And I was going to try for them, for myself, to be strong again and to be resilient and to do good. And yeah, that was a true turning point. And I didn't know how to do that. I mean, how do you teach yourself strength? I don't know. But that night I was in bed thinking about this. How am I really going to change? And I read the story about a woman, Julie Weiss, who did 52 marathons in 52 weeks. And after losing her dad from pancreatic cancer within 31 days, and she raised $1 million for pancreatic cancer research so that that wouldn't happen again. And I went to bed thinking about Julie and her mission and her runs. And so when I woke up in the morning, even though I couldn't run a mile at the time, and I was 4 months postpartum, it's like, I'm going to run 29 marathons this year because I'm turning 29. And this year, I'm going to believe that I can be limitless and I can actually do this impossible task. And I'm not only going to do that, I'm going to tell the whole world about what happened to me. And I'm going to use my story to help not only raise money, but also awareness for survivors. And I'm going to be a story that shows other people, like what my 19-year-old self needed to hear, which is like, you can be strong, and you can be brave, and you can be resilient, and you can reclaim your story. So that was a lot of rambling. I don't know if you want to, if I should keep on going or continue the 29 marathon odyssey.
I think, continuing on and kind of like showing the endurance, because like like you say and like I say, endurance, it has a lot of meaning to it. And we know that healing is not linear, it's complex, and being an athlete and running marathons, it lets all of that, all those like negative energy and like all of the feelings, you know, it's all getting out at that point, you know. And it takes endurance to do the work that you are doing. And I find it deeply inspiring. And I'm so excited to continue watching your journey because you got some exciting things coming up. And you know, just continue walking through what those marathons did. What was it like doing that first marathon that you did? Like, that's what I'm actually intrigued by is like, what was that first one that you ever did? You know, think back to that and think about what that felt like. Because you're probably thinking, what the fuck did I sign up for? What did I try to do? Like, walk us through that journey for you.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the first marathon because it's my favorite. but I don't talk about it a lot. So I accidentally signed up instead of one marathon, starting out this journey. I signed up for three marathons in 3 days, running around Lake Tahoe, which I didn't realize how ambitious it was, because I didn't look into it. I did not know the details. I was like, I'm gonna show up. I have obviously trained, and I'd been training for only 3 months. From 0 to 20 miles was my furthest one. But yeah, there was elevation. There was no road closures for the first 2 days. So you had these 18-wheelers whizzing past you, and then the altitude. And not to mention, like, motherhood's a big part of this too. The airline the night before had lost my bag. So my breast pump, because I was breastfeeding, my shoes, my gels, everything was just gone. And I was supposed to run a marathon. And I remember calling the airline and just sobbing because my breast, I had already started metastasizing. I think that's how you say that word. And so I couldn't even like lift up my arms, and I was supposed to run a marathon. So, anyways, the night before the race, they finally got all of my gear for me. I had to set my alarm for, I think, 4:30 a.m. And I started this run. And man, was it harder than I could have ever imagined. I've never shared this story online before, or with anyone, but literally at mile 16, I was having the worst stomach issues in the world. And as I said, they didn't shut down the roads. They did not have porta potties. And so I jumped over this huge, like, overpass, scaled down a hill, thought I was hiding, did my runner's business. And as I was trying to get back up, I face planted in my own shit. It was all over my white jacket that I had bought for this run. And in that moment, like you said, it was a what did I sign up for? This is a complete shit show. Like, why did I think this was going to work? I started crying. And then in that moment, I realized that I had set myself up for an opportunity where I actually got to learn about strength. Because you don't just get to say, like, I'm strong now. I felt like in my healing journey, I had to prove to myself I was strong. So I took my white jacket off. I tied it. I tied it around my waist. I climbed back up the hill and I kept on going. And it was moments like that, moments when I crossed the finish line, moments where I just wanted to sit down and cry and decided to keep on going to get to that finish line that I got to put like a drop in a bucket to say, I am stronger than I thought I was. I've been resilient this whole time, and I'm finally proving to myself again and again as these marathons go that I'm a badass and that I can survive and that I can thrive and I can reclaim my story. So I have 29 medals now hanging up on my rack. And I also washed my jacket, but also framed that jacket to be like, you've been through some tough shit. And you kept on going. And I think that jacket is also just important as those medals, because we're going to have moments in life that challenge us, that make us want to quit and cry. I think all survivors have that, but it's the fact that we keep on crawling, keep on walking, keep on going that make us realize and see, looking back, how strong we are. And it's those challenges that really show us what we're made of, right?
Absolutely, you know, and
I know.
I'm sitting here trying not to laugh because I'm like, oh my God, I'm imagining the face planning. But anyway, so you were the inspiration behind the Summer Willis Act that passed in Texas. And, you know, walk us through like a little bit of that journey because this closed a couple loopholes, or closed a loophole, or a couple loopholes, whichever. But it kind of changes and kind of sets the tone for how the rest of the states are supposed to, you know, respond and, you know, advocate for justice for survivors. And this opened up the door for more survivors to pursue justice. And it took three sessions.
No, it took six
Was
sessions,
it
but let's
six? Oh, God.
six. It literally, okay, I'm gonna go backwards and we'll get to this. But yes, so basically I don't know how to rest anymore. And after I finished my 29 marathons, I rested for 2 weeks. And then I thought, I met so many survivors because I didn't tell my story before. I didn't realize how many survivors there was, because I was trying to avoid this. But on my runs, I told podcast hosts and moms on the playground on Mondays and runners, and everyone either said, like, that happened to me, that happened to my brother, that happened to my grandmother. Like, everyone is 1 degree of se separation. And so I thought, I need to do something. And when I told my story to the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault, they told me my rape didn't count because one person handed me the drink that night and another person raped me. My story didn't count. There was a loophole. And to be told that the worst thing that ever happened to you didn't count, I mean, there aren't words. There was sadness and fury, and the realization there are 8.5 million survivors in my state of Texas. How many of those were told that their story didn't count because of the loopholes? And so, what the state, TASA, and these representatives have been trying to do since I was raped 10 years ago, because Texas has like 2 year sessions, was instead of saying what sexual assault or rape is not, sorry, consent was not, they were just trying to pass a definition of consent, and the Senate had never heard it before. So we had to think about how can we pass it this year. And one, I realized that we got a lot of media attention through the 29 marathons. So I'm going to do a stunt for you guys. And what I decided to do was crawl on my hands and my knees for on and off 22 hours. And during the Austin Marathon, I was going to be the story of the Austin Marathon that had built-in media coverage. And I'm going to invite legislators to join me and cross the finish line. And we did it. And we got on Runner's World. We got on the 5 o'clock news on every single station in Austin. People really started paying attention. So that worked. And it was in that crawl they decided to rename the bill the Summer Willis Act after me. And by doing that, it wasn't necessarily my name. It was that we had a story. So we were able to say, like, wasn't this an injustice that happened to Summer? Well, it's happening to more. Like, call your representative, call your senator. And we started putting pressure on them. We started getting celebrities like Monica Lewinsky and Christy Turlington, Amy Griffin, like these big names to reshare, to get people to realize what was happening. And it was like a movie because we stopped calling because the Senate was, we're not hearing it, we're not hearing it. And then finally, with the pressure, they literally said people would not stop calling about the bill. That literally on the last day, in the last 30 minutes, the Senate, who had refused to hear it for 10 years, called the bill and it passed unanimously in 3 minutes. And our whole team, and I think all of Texas who's following the story, were just in tears because this bill finally gave survivors hope that there are people who are fighting for them and that politicians cared. So why was this bill important? It was important because Texas, before there was a definition of consent, it was just a list of consent is not. And so unless your rape falls under a really specific it is not definition, they couldn't take your case. So, for example, when we were testifying, a prosecutor got up there and said last week someone was on a work retreat. She had to ha share a room with a male coworker. She woke up and he was inside of her. She froze, which is a natural fear response. She didn't fight. She didn't yell. She froze. She came to see us 2 days later. And because her response was freezing and she didn't fight back and she didn't yell, we couldn't take her case because the frozen natural fear response wasn't included in these consent is not definitions. So now that we have a definition, it opens up so many more opportunities for cases. It's not these, it is not definition. So I think that really helps. And also, it was such a win for Texas because we're actually only, according to the CNN article about this, the third state that passed an intoxication clause. New York tried to do it last session. It literally failed. Just saying intoxication does not equal consent in really protecting people who have voluntarily drank alcohol and saying you don't have permission to rape them, which seems obvious, but it's not a law in most states. So I'm really, really proud of the work we did in Texas. And I think it's important to know, like, I had no experience. I don't have a law degree. I don't have a government degree. I've never done policy. But the power of a story and the power of actually like calling in these offices and forming a coalition is so important. And so that's why Zach, you talked about helping me, but Strength Through Strides, my charity, is creating an advocate boot camp with big names and absolute experts to be like, you want to pass a law? Like the justice system screwed you over. Like, here's how we were able to build momentum and success with the Summer Willis Act so that anybody like me can do that in their state. And with these laws, it's more important to have state protections than national protections. So, yeah, that's the Summer Willis Act.
I'm really glad that you mentioned about New York because there's a coalition of people that, advocated and met every single week and talked about, what's happening in the state legislature, what's happening, with the leadership of the state, and even being a progressive state, right? New York is seen as a state that kind of sets the tone, right? It's one of the states that
Yeah.
sets the tone. This goes to show that even in the most progressive states, whether it be, just very left, right? Now, it shows that even in states like that, there's still a lot of work to do because they have that involuntary intoxication loop or a voluntary intoxication loophole. And it's so mind-blowing that in 2025, we still have to advocate and educate about what consent is, right? Now, this also kind of ties into the fact of why we need comprehensive sex education instead of teaching about abstinence only. Right? Now, it all kind of ties together. It all ties in together. And I'm really glad that you mentioned about New York because I was going to mention that as well.
I want to
And
mention New York just to call you or like to shout you out because I didn't realize New York was trying to do that too until I saw your Instagram feed about it. And I was like, I can't believe they're trying to do this too. And that led me to be introduced to them. And we had a press conference 48 hours before the session ended to plead with people, like, please call, like, please put pressure. But yeah, people think Texas is one of the later states to make progressive legislation. But there's a leader in New York, and I won't say his name, but he literally called this voluntary intoxication bill buyer's remorse, and said, "What's wrong with drunk sex?" And that is a Democratic leader in the House of New York. And so there is issues with so many of these leaders that is insane. It only takes you a couple of minutes of internet research to figure out like who they're really protecting. And I just couldn't believe that that was out of a leader's mouth in New York. And that is one of the reasons the bill died in New York. And they're gonna have to do it again this year. And it's the seventh year now. And they had like 100 representatives backing this bill as well, and it still failed. So, yeah, it's just crazy.
I know exactly which leader you're talking about. I will not mention names either, but I know exactly who you're talking about because I was on a call with the coalition of people that you have also connected with, including Will Rivera, which Will just won his election summer. And
Go, Will!
I'm so damn proud of him. I'm so excited. He's been such a sounding board for survivors. He's a big reason for all the advocacy that's going on work, but also just across the country. You know, the work that he does. I'm so excited to see him elected into his role as town supervisor in Oneonta, I think is how you say it. I always butcher the name of that city, but just excited, you know, to kind of see the progress continue happening. There's a lot of momentum across the country right now. Some big elections just happened, and progress is being made for fighting for women, fighting for reproductive rights, fighting for survivors, LGBTQ plus community members, disabled community members. Like, love always wins. So, you know, I continue connecting with people like you and connecting with people like Will and connecting with, you know, we built a platform from the ground up. And we've only been around for a little over a year. And in
Wow.
that year, I've heard a lot of stories. I've heard some horror stories. I've laughed. I've cried. I've thrown my phone. I've ranted to my mom, I don't know how many times, countless numbers of times. I've talked to my dog. I went out and touched grass. I hugged a tree. Like, I've done a lot of things in the last year because there's a lot of emotions. So, what I'm intrigued by is what are you doing now? So, after Sumner Willis Act, and you know, I know some of the things that you have coming up, and kind of share what you can. I know there's some things that are still in the works, but what's next for you?
Yeah, no, I'm asked that a lot, and I feel like the answer is usually new because, as you said, there's so much to be done. And I like to think that our approach at Strength Through Strides, the charity, is creative solutions and a creative approach, hence running a marathon with a mattress on my back and crawling and all of that stuff. But next, we have two big projects, and I think I'm telling you first. but one, I am working on a short animated film, and it's called A Letter to My Younger Self, and it's something I wrote right after I passed the Sumner Willis Act to my 19-year-old self who had just been raped. And it's what I wish she knew. And it has so much love and, I don't know, a roller coaster of emotions in only 5 minutes. And I'm really excited about this project because we just got Soledad O'Brien from CNN involved and Monica Lewinsky and one of my favorite directors, Hisako Hulsing. And I'm just so excited to be able to put this creativity to use and to make something unique that I could bring to college campuses that nonprofits can show, that I can watch with my sons one day. And I feel like a lot of times people are like, well, why don't you just get over your assault? Like, why aren't you better the next week? And this really shows my 10-year journey of all the ways that I tried to heal and to be better, and the times I failed in a 5-minute mark. And I'm really excited about that. The other project I'm working on is, as you know, my healing journey started really with these runs and building community through these runs, reclaiming my story. So I thought, during the runs, April, Sexual Assault Awareness and Prevention Month, like no one's talking about sexual assault. No one knows it's our month. No one wants to do anything. I'm going to make them talk about it. I'm going to make sure everyone knows about April, just like they know about October with like Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And so the idea is that we're creating the Denim Runs. And our first year, we're going to have a race in LA, in Austin, and in New York, as well as a virtual option. So anyone can get their coworkers or their high school team or their college campus to do this as well. But it's based off of this famous Italian case 26 years ago. Don't know if you guys know it, but there was a woman who said, "I was raped," took the guy to court, and the judge said, "You weren't raped because your jeans were too tight, and you had to have helped him take your jeans off." And it's absurd. And it was literally nicknamed the denim defense, that these jeans were too tight. And so the next day, Parliament showed up in protest in their denim, saying that no matter what you're wearing, it is never okay to rape someone. And we stand with survivors. So 26 years later, there are about 20 states that literally celebrate Denim Day. It's last Wednesday in April. And we thought, let's make a race series around this because a lot of people don't know about it, but we're going to make people know about it. And we're going to give people who want to be involved in Sexual Assault Awareness Month something to do, a way to support all of these different sexual assault organizations, to raise awareness about them, to stand with survivors. Brands can come in to activate at these events. And I'm just so excited to give survivors the community that I didn't feel like I had for 10 years, and also a way to celebrate our strength and resilience. Because as you said, it's literally the definition of being a survivor is our strength and our resilience and our ability to have to go from crawling to walking to running. Like, we got this, and let's stand together in April and let's celebrate, like if you'd like. And then we'll also have like different resources in each community out there, letting people know how they're helping. So yeah, I'm really excited about these big projects.
With the big names, I know that these projects are going to be successful. And I'm so excited, to continue watching your journey. And, we are here as a movement to collaborate, amplify, organize alongside you. And we are here because we believe in a world that survivors are believed. We believe in a world that people can come together and recognize this as a public health crisis and as an epidemic that continues to go untouched, because a lot of people don't recognize that these issues are running rampant through our communities. And with that, is there anything else you wanted to share with our listeners today? How can they find you on social media? And how can they amplify your work in your foundation?
Yeah, no, great questions. We're growing, and so if you want to follow me personally, and that will link you to all the other projects, it's like LIKE Summer Willis. Would love to connect with you guys. Tickets are going to go on sale for the runs, December 10th. We have a big launch, which I'm excited about. You can form teams, you can get your community involved, and that website is stsdenim5k.com. Well, and as I said, we're gonna start selling tickets December December 10th. So you should sign up for Zach's team. I'm making him a team captain and sending you a t-shirt. Right, Zach?
Yes, absolutely. And
Yeah.
I'm gonna rock the hell out of it too. I can already tell you that because I am so excited about this and I'll be participating virtually.
Yeah.
And
You gotta get
I,
the whole community involved though. Bring your mom, bring the
yes.
dog or the cat, you know, whatever.
Well, I don't know about the cat part because she's kind of,
You
well,
don't have a collar for your cat or one of the leashes?
it's not necessarily that. She's a little chunky.
Fair enough.
Oh my gosh. All right, my friend. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. Please take care of yourself, and we will see you very, very soon.
Yeah, and thank you for making this so fun. I hope I don't regret telling the face planting story.
Well, I think it's going to resonate because I've also face planted.
Oh
That's a whole another story. I face planted and it was in a room full of people that I had no idea who the hell they are, and it was not intentional. I was just a little tipsy at a drag bar, and it was very interesting. Anybody out there who knows me that's listening to this, you know the story because I've shared it a couple times, but whew, you're not the only one, Summer. You're not the only one.
Good to know.
All right. Take care, my friend.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
Thank
Talk to you
you.
soon.
Bye.